Okay, looks like we did it. We got our guest, and he is a remarkable individual who has been on this program in years past, and I got an email from him recently and invited him back on again. He's doing charitable work in Afghanistan, especially trying to help little children and all Afghanis who have been stricken with cancers and other catastrophic illnesses, primarily from the result of living in a post-depleted uranium occupation by American forces and use of those weapons thereof. His name is Dr. Mohammed Daoud Meraki, Ph.D. I think he's got more degrees than that, as I remember, but he is standing by. And let me make sure he can hear me all right, then I'm going to read a little background on him for you so you know who we're going to talk to. Dr. Meraki, are you there?
Greetings, Jeff. How are you doing? I'm here.
Well, you sound like you're right next door. This is a good connection. Very good.
Yeah, very good connection.
I don't know how many years it has been since you were on, but it was really nice to hear from you again and to find out what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, let me tell our listeners. Last time, like 2011, I think it was.
Was it 2011? Wow. All right.
Well. 2011 or 2009. I'm not sure. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's about right, 15, 16 years. Dr. Meraki is a policy analyst, a researcher, and a public intellectual with advanced academic training in political science and Middle Eastern studies. Talk about an opportunity to get another analysis of the situation. We're going to get that in this hour. He has a Ph.D. in public policy analysis. His work has consistently focused on conflict, governance, and the long-term societal impacts of war, particularly that in Afghanistan, but there's never a shortage of wars in the Middle East. Beyond academics, Dr. Meraki has been an outspoken anti-war advocate, drawing attention to the humanitarian and environmental consequences of modern warfare, and boy, are there lots of them. He has worked to expose the use of uranium-based munitions, DU, in Afghanistan and their potential long-term health and ecological effects, contributing to broader discussions on accountability and the laws of armed conflict. And I might add, war crimes. In parallel, Dr. Meraki is also actively engaged in advancing cancer solutions in Afghanistan, working on initiatives that promote public awareness, early detection, and the development of treatment and research capacity in a resource-constrained environment. His efforts aim to address one of the country's growing health challenges through integrated, locally grounded approaches. For more than 20 years, he has also faced significant personal and professional challenges over here in the U.S., which I'm familiar with, and they are really awful, including being placed on a watch list, a blacklist, which he attributes to his outspoken positions and exercise of his First Amendment rights here in the U.S. Despite these obstacles, Dr. Meraki has continued his research, advocacy, and public engagement, maintaining a very strong commitment to justice, transparency, and the protection of human life. Sounds like something we should all be involved with. So there we go. That is our guest this hour, Dr. Mohammed Daoud Meraki. And he is in, are you in Kabul right now, Dr. Meraki? Where are you?
I'm in Kabul. Yes, I'm in Kabul at this time.
So let's first jump into the issue in Afghanistan. The U.S. was occupying the country for about how long? What was it? 10, 12 years? I can't remember.
20 years. Yeah. 20 years, yeah. 20 years, and these 20 years, Afghanistan, unfortunately, served as a testing ground for various type of munitions and weapons that had really significant impact on the population here, and the consequences are truly horrific.
You sent me a video of a little girl, I don't know, 5 or 6 years of age, laying on the on the ground with blankets and dying of cancer and from probably depleted uranium exposure. And there, this is a major epidemic, I'm assuming, in not just Kabul but most of the country, because DU is used all over the place, and it is blown around by the wind.
Yes, very true. And the irony is this, that after 20 years of war, Afghanistan is, you know, it's a post-conflict society. They have lots of restrictions, economics and otherwise, on the country. And so poverty is, in abject poverty is all around. And especially the treatment issue, you know, there is chemotherapy, but nothing else. You know, chemotherapy without other means are not very effective. And so the people, you know, you see hospitals, I mean, you know, they have the most, the strongest, you know, capacity. You can't hold back, because you see a lot of kids, they have cancers, a lot of elderly people, they are laying down on the side of the, in the yards of the hospital. And so I came to the conclusion that, you know, since we have no other options, you know, there's a lot of recent research, you know, some anecdotal, that certain medications such as the, you know, the anti-parasite medications such as fenbendazole, ivermectin, mombendazole, and others tend to help patients. And I thought, well, we'll give it a shot. But the irony is this, you know me, I've been unemployed for 20 years. for opening my mouth, but you know, I mean, running around trying to raise money for these medications, and you know, we could probably purchase it from India nearby or some other country, and then administer it to the patients, because people have no option. Either they have to die, or somebody has to be kind enough to render some support, and we could purchase the medication. But the, in a larger scheme of things, it's nothing, you know, the country level. You know, I was aiming like for $40,000-$45,000 to raise to help these people. But, you know, I wish I had it. I would not be asking anyone all around. But the issue is, this is nothing personal, something that helped the poor people, and they're in a very dire situation. And
That's a heartbreaker. I don't know how you do it, but I understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. You've always been that kind of person, as far as I have ever known, all our visits before and so forth. Dr. Meraki is a true humanitarian, and he is trying to, if you want to donate even $5, $10, whatever, he can go through India and get ivermectin, fenbendazole, mebendazole, you can get it right there. And it has been, as most of you know, very effective in many, many types of cancers. It's probably as close to a legitimate pharmaceutical cancer cure that we're ever going to see. Well, ever is a long time, but this has been around for decades, and no one knew about it. Now the word is out, and I don't think Big Pharma is happy about it, because people are buying it from India. What is the other one? Vanna something. It's an island nation. Vanatua. Anyway, if you go to India, Dr. Meraki, I think your price is going to be better. And the one I know of is Sunrise Hospital. Sunrise Hospital or Sunrise Pharmacy in India. It's online. And they have all of those things. They have many things there. And they're very inexpensive. Good quality, too. So if anybody wants to donate, we did a terrible thing to that country. It has been the scene of fighting for far too long. And we have, if there's a moral ethic left, we have a responsibility to try to help even one little child there. And Dr. Meraki is there to do whatever it takes, if he can, to help. He's got to have some funding, though. So under his name and guests, you'll see his PayPal account. So if you want to send him $10, $20, please do. it will go to a good cause. This is a good man. He's an honorable man. He's a brilliant man. And he is really doing things that, you're welcome, sir. He's doing things that our government, if we had a government, should do out of responsibility and humane considerations of the people we have so terribly impacted, and we did awful things to that country. All right. Now, tell me about the doctors there. Have they heard of ivermectin, et cetera, for example, or what is their paradigm for treating cancer, for example?
It's, you know, the doctors over here, they face a dilemma, a huge dilemma, not only in treatment, but a dilemma that they have to deal with their own psychological problem. The main problem is this, that they have to shield themselves from the pain of not being able to do anything. And number two, yeah, because they just say, okay, palliative, and end of story. And they see it so much that, you know, they try to shield their emotions and not to deal with it because they don't have anything. And so the organizations such as the World Health Organization and others, for example, the European Union has donated 16 million euro for a hospital, you know, rebuilding or an old building and turning into a hospital and so forth.
Yes.
Out of the 16 million euro, they spent only $60,000, and the rest vanished.
All stolen.
WHO, and in all the NGOs, the biggest thieves. They pocket the money under the auspices of administrative costs, this cost, that cost, and so the irony is this, that what that bothers me the most is that 90% of the patients that come from the dominant, ethnic group, the Pashtun or the Afghan, we call it. 70% of the population is that, because most of the bombing was done in those areas. They were the ones that were fighting against NATO and the US forces. And so you see a family, you bring the little son or daughter or wife and so forth, accompanied by two or three more people. They have nowhere to stay, and so they just sleep on the front yard of the hospital with minimal means to cover themselves in cold and in heat equally. So it's a disastrous situation. I mean, it's just. I remember back, and I believe it was 2011 or I think it was 2012 or so. In one of our villages near Kabul, where I come from, they used a weapon that I could not find as far online or anything, but somebody told me about it. They were like small cans of Coke, you know, Coca-Cola and so forth. They threw it and they departed, and within a few seconds, it created a heat, and whomever was in the vicinity got just burned and then inflamed beyond recognition. I mean, these are the kind of weapons you use on human beings. It just defies common sense.
I haven't heard of this one. So let's say it's like a can of Coca-Cola, and the soldier or whomever would pop the top open and just throw the can
from
and
the
it would
plane.
Ignite from the plane?
Yeah, from the helicopter.
Okay.
From the helicopter, they would depart the area. And then what will happen is that you would create an instantaneous severe heat, whatever else they have in that weapon. And then when the population there, they couldn't recognize the dead. So they would search their pockets to find any IDs to do that. I mean, for example, one area, they used white phosphorus and they burned 150 people to bones. I mean, these are things done was a normal, almost normal for the past 20 years. But that's over. The irony is this. We have a crisis, major crisis of, cancers are through the roof. with zero care, zero options to help the patients. You know, my economic situation, you know my economic situation, but, you know, whatever meager here and there I found, I would go search the pharmacies here, see if I could find something, and, you know, trying to give this to patients. In fact, one of the things I did was, we have a lot of apricots in Afghanistan, and so the apricot seeds that are bitter seeds, you know, that difficult to buy on it, they're not sweet. They have, you know, some chemicals that some people, you know, anecdotally at least, claim to halt the progress of cancer in the body and just kind of making it turn acute disease to somewhat chronic. And so, I mean, this is something very simple, but, you know, whatever was in the market, we went around and, you know, bought whatever we could.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So you actually, excuse me, you actually, because you do have a lot of apricots in Afghanistan, you went around and got the seeds and you were trying to get inside the hard kernel of the seed is another seed inside that. And we call it over here Laetrol or vitamin B17. Of course, the medical establishment says it can't work, but it does work in some cases. Why, I don't know, but it does help in some cases. So you were literally doing anything you could think of to try to give these people an option, because all the doctors there, and you've made it clear, all they can do is palliative treatment, which is not really curing anything. It's just doing something to do something, but it isn't a cure. Palliative treatment is just serving to alleviate symptoms. That's it. That's all.
That's it. That's all it is. And you're desperate. You do desperate things, you know. Desperate people resort to desperate measures. Yeah. And I would even go to the point I would, black seed oil or things like that, I would recommend to people black seeds, you know, that have some anti-cancer properties, or I would recommend, I mean, you see, the issue is this, that even if you had ample chemotherapy, in a poor country, people don't have enough intake food, enough proper nutrition.
So when wipe you, them out.
When you dump chemotherapy into their body, basically you're accelerating death. You're not doing anything to remedy their problem.
I understand.
So it's, you know, options of such as immunotherapy or targeted therapy or this therapy, that therapy, that's non-existent. In fact, I sent some emails about 2-3 months ago, several times, to a source that was had links with Dr. Patrick Schoing, who's, I believe, situated in California, who produced, who's a billionaire, but he invested in this medication for cancer that enhances the immune system and basically controls the cancer and people go into remission. And his medication is only allowed for bladder cancer, but it works for almost all the cancers.
Huh.
So I send him an email. I haven't gotten a reply. I said, look, come to Afghanistan. We'll allow you to use your medication, full-blown, no limitation, you know, with moral boundaries. But we are desperate if you can help. But thus far, I haven't received whether he got the email or not. I don't know. So, I mean, it's just, these are things I do, but, you know, I'm just one person, you know, I wish.
I remember you risked your life many times when we were doing programs trying to help.
I remember.
There. Very difficult.
No, it was
times.
A huge help. It was a help at that time. I remember three programs. I remember one thing I was telling the folks here in Afghanistan, one particular memory that really made me you know, it just humbled me. I mean, it was a very emotional thing. A lady sent a small donation of $10 from New York when I was coming doing humanitarian work. And she wrote in that letter that I lost my job. That's all I have. I swear to you, up to, you know, it's been 15 or so years. I haven't forgotten it. Each time I think about it, it just hurts me. I mean, the humanity of certain people, you just cannot, they shake off. I mean, just there are people everywhere that leave an impact on you.
You fought a wonderful, heroic campaign to try to make differences in a number of areas there. And there were people here listening to you on the program who did try to help. They're wonderful people. This is the best audience in the world, I think, in radio. I really do.
Wonderful people. Wonderful people. I remember they're great people. They cared.
Yes.
I mean, it's just... Yes. They cared, and they would send me emails. They would do this. What can you do?
That's
I said, I'm just one person. Yeah. One person. I wish I had other means. And I would just sometimes I get donations of equipment back there in 2007, 2008. There was no direct flight to Afghanistan. I would go to Pakistan, carry the big bags on my back, and cross the border, and then donate them to local hospital. And one day, a person told me, he said, are you crazy? I told him, what did I do? He said, look, you have the opportunity. If you could have just shut your mouth, you would have made millions. And I said, yeah, I could have, but I have conscience. I can't take blood money.
Of course not. No, that's not who you are. Dr. Meraki has, if I remember correctly, you have... a PhD and two master's degrees, or two PhDs? I can't remember. You have multiple degrees.
Two masters, two bachelors, and a PhD. And I was working on another PhD. I just didn't finish it because I had economic problems. And I said, the heck with it. So I need to live too. But, about 2 years ago, my wife had breast cancer. And that was a very devastating impact on my family. And since then, you know, my wife is in the U.S., but because there at least we have some means, medical care. And then on top of it, I started using medicinal mushrooms or sulforaphane that comes from broccoli and other things that mm-hmm. keeps things in check and so forth. But things like that are, of course, you could never find it here. But, you know, this fenbendazole and the rest, the antiparasitic drugs and so forth, I thought we'll give it a shot. I mean, at least I'll have my conscience, clean that I've done something. I mean, whether it works or not, it depends on Almighty.
It does depend on the universe and God, ultimately. Yeah. But I do know that I have seen hundreds of stories of successful outcomes from cancers of multiple different types by using ivermectin and either fenbendazole or mebendazole, either one. And I'm just very excited about this potential. If you can get a little bit of money, you can go to India and you can secure it there. Your job would seem to be also you need to find... oncology doctors there that you can work with, or are you going to just do this outside the medical system entirely? What are your plans?
Actually, I talked to the hospital that opened here, which has very limited resources. I told them, let's make this a pilot study.
Good idea.
If I can find the money to purchase the medication, let's administer to, let's say, 30, 40 patients and monitor them for 2, 3, 4 months. When we see a progress, we can expand it and make it part of the treatment option. The side effect, nothing could be worse than the side effect of chemotherapy. And so, this is doable, you know, and then it's a huge, benefit in the hereafter. If you believe in God Almighty, you do good, no matter what I mean, it's one God for everybody. I don't care about whomever categorize it. One universal creator, and if you do good, you benefit in this world and in the hereafter. So that's my firm belief, and wonderful people are everywhere to do this.
Well, I hope people are able, and as you know very well, Americans, you're an American, are really in trouble financially now.
I know.
Jobs for many people, worse to come, very little disposable income. So even $5 or $10 for some people, like the lady in New York, is a lot of money. That's fine if we can get a lot of people to just send $10. That will help you. And I think the idea of setting up a pilot study is brilliant. That's the way to do it. You'll get some results. How many? I don't know. But this has been too well tested here now. Too many good results to dismiss. This works in many cases. I can't say all. It supposedly also enables chemotherapy to be more effective on the theoretical basis that it works, at all. So there's that. So ivermectin, fenbendazole, mebendazole, you've all heard about that. We've done many programs on it over the last, long time.
The other thing is just that I heard about, Raymond machine, what's his name?
Rife.
Raymond Rife, that there is a lot of, the cases I have looked and some of the impossible, cures I have seen, people have seen results.
Rife therapy. Yes, I've been involved with Rife therapy for 35 years since I found out about it in college. And it works. It if they had left Royal Rife alone, we wouldn't have any infectious disease now. I'm sure of it.
Right.
He found that all infectious organisms have a frequency, a certain wavelength, that will destroy them if they get too much of it. They just absorb it, and then they fall apart, these organisms, viral, bacterial, whatever. So, yes, Rife therapy is one of several cancer cures that the government has suppressed here. And somehow ivermectin escaped being crushed into oblivion by the pharmaceutical government monolith here. It got past it. It's out now, and there's nothing they can do about it except continue to scare them that you're going to die if you take that stuff. That's what they like to do. Anyway, I hope this works. So all of you out there, you know me, and I've known Dr. Meraki for a long time. This is something I think we can all afford a little bit to help. And he's more than trustworthy. Believe me, this would be a fascinating thing to see. If you can set up a test protocol with 30, 40 patients, and these are little children over there. Depleted uranium doesn't take prisoners. It's uniformly deadly. It's a horrible thing, and we polluted the entire country with it. That's us. That's what we did.
And the irony is this, Jeff, that, when you go to some of the bombs that they call Buster Bunker bombs, they penetrated deep, in the mountains and so forth, and many of the water sources that people in the past had used, and they're extremely contaminated.
Oh, yes.
And then
I get it.
Then I think it was 2019 or 20. I think it's 2019 when they used the other bomb, the mother of all bombs or whatever they call it.
Moab.
Moab. Yeah, they used that. They claimed they were ISIS people, but that was actually a drug factory that the Taliban were advancing to expose it. A manufacturing factory for heroin that was being transshipped to the United States by the government. And so they used that on that, place. And that area, there is no vegetation, the normal growth of anything. People have various conditions, diseases.
Nothing, in other words, you're saying nothing grew after they dropped the MOAB, the Moab mother of all bombs on it. It just, nothing grows. Wow.
No, nothing. Well, no regular agriculture. I mean, it's just mutation happens. Mutation happens in terms of vegetation and all that. And now, of course, we have this problem there. And then this is a universal problem now, Jeff, that, you know, in Iraq, the same problem. In former Yugoslavia, I compared the data with folks from Serbia, from Bosnia, from Croatia. In that area, I compare our data back. I believe it was 2008 or so. It was almost identical. And then I compared the cases with people in southern Iraq or in Fallujah, as well as in other places. It's like the same kind of results, same kind of nightmare that people have everywhere. I mean, there is no solution for it. But the issue is that if you can at least, as a human being, tell our conscience that, you know, no matter what, we tried something. We tried something, at least in our degree of self-respect, I will have, say, okay, I didn't ignore it, at least I did something. You know, that's something I think is shared humanity by all of us, and I think transcends borders, religions, and whatever else, because humanity is humanity. I mean, it's just, you cannot... compartmentalize it and name it whatever you want. But
no, I couldn't agree more. You're completely correct. Yeah, we have to do something. And if you can look yourself, look yourself in the mirror and say, "I tried. I did something. I tried."
That's a great thing. I mean, we see the Zionists doing the same thing now, you know, in Iran next door and so forth. The amount of munitions. I mean, then now saying that you're going to use nuclear bombs on civilians. That's a nightmare. I mean, just.
Well, they're crazy. Those people are crazy. They're absolutely evil, stark raving evil, crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's the Epstein class, you know. Epstein,
yes, sir.
I always had this question, you know, Jeff. I had always this question, okay? I would, back in the day when they were bombing Soviet Afghanistan, I would ask myself, don't these leaders and those heads of government, do they have any humanity? Why don't they have any mercy on the kids, on this? And this? Then after that, the Epstein case, and I said, good God, what they did to those kids, now I fully understand that they have absolutely no mercy on others. Of course they
won't.
They didn't have in their own kids, on their own enclave, in their environment. Why would they have it on other people that you don't know? I mean,
correct.
It's just horrific.
Yeah, it is beyond words, my friend. It truly is. I just don't have the words.
I swear to you, sometimes I read a few things, Jeff, I couldn't sleep for days. I mean, it's how could the human being be so despicable?
Mm-hmm.
How rotten can a human being get?
Have to do is study the Epstein case, and these are the rich and powerful, supposedly.
Yeah.
Look what they're doing. Yeah. And we know what they've done, even if they're redacted and blacked out. We know. You can figure it out. Trump is as guilty as sin. He's in there. 10 years as Epstein's best friend. Come on. We've got a real big problem. When a species begins to turn on its young, its children, its offspring, whatever they may be, it's doomed. It's doomed. If we don't stop this somehow and root it out, we're not going to be around. I really believe that.
No, I heard some people, patriots, people, regular, decent people online, they said, look, I don't care. I'm going to rise up. I mean, I'm going to stop this nonsense. You know, I have kids. I have the future of my kids. I can't have this nightmare going on. And I said, I couldn't agree more. I mean, think about it. It's it's a hard situation. And now, the other thing is this: that back in 2012, when there was a negotiation between Taliban and the U.S. to end the war back in 2019. I mean, I recommended a lot to the people who were in negotiation that, look, hold the U.S. government accountable, so at least they have a foundation or a hospital or something so you can help the needy and the sick people here. But, you know, they were not accepting it, the U.S. Government. They said, no, we're not taking responsibility for any of this.
Yeah, they never
do. And then I said, okay, you know, we have one war that's going to end. Then we have a silent war that's going to be for generations to come. Remember, Jeff, for many years I was running around hoping to raise money for monitoring stations throughout Afghanistan.
Yes. Yes,
but you know, nobody in this world. Trust me, in this world, if you want to do good, all the doors are closed. But if you want to do evil, you just have people running after you and say, "Okay, I can help. Okay." But it's just because evil is evil, you know. It takes different efforts to be a good human being, to be a decent human, God-fearing person. And you know, because that's a test. You know, to be a God-fearing person, you have to go the extra mile because mm-hmm. you do what God Almighty has bestowed on us, humanity. And if we have our humanity, then you know, God willing, we can do something good to another human being. I mean, it's just I don't care where you come from. I don't care what your religious belief is. I don't care what your language is. If you're a human being, you're a human being, period. That makes no difference to me. And so I think that's the basic thing as human being we have to respect. I mean, this is our species. You know, we are part of the same species.
Right. It doesn't get any more clear than that, and you've stated it very well. You know, I remember back when you were on more often, back in the day then, you were out...
Sure.
I was worried you were going to be blown up in a bombing. And they were bombing everywhere back then.
It happened several times. It happened. You know, one time I went to this area that they bombed and they killed 102 civilians, including kids who were running away from they bombed their, you know, one case they bombed their grandparents and they were running away screaming that we are scared. And they knock at one door, neighbor's door to open. And they used the rocket on the kids and, of course, the neighbor. They were all gone. So, and I was, many times I was in the vicinity of bombing in areas where I was running around. A few times they came and ransacked where I was staying. And I said, look, what the heck, if you cannot even, allow a person to open his or her mouth, I mean, I'm not engaging in physical war or violence or anything. I'm just exercising my fundamental rights of freedom of speech, which and also, you know, seeking justice.
Well, basic for human rights.
Yeah, basic human rights. I mean, it's just why you have to do this. But the irony is this, after I see these cases and so forth, I understand that the humanity is the last thing they worry about.
It's true. It's very sad, but very true. If I might, in our remaining minutes, I would like to get your view on the reality of what's going on in the war by Israel and the United States against the Iranians and their 5,000-year-old civilization. And that's why Trump was talking about a civilization. I'm going to wipe it out, whatever he said exactly. He didn't, but I don't believe that this ceasefire is real. I don't believe the U.S. will honor it. I don't think their Israeli controllers will allow it. And I think the war is going to pick up in 2 weeks or less. I think it's going to continue. I think the Iranians are digging up their missiles right now. A lot of them were buried and bombing, but they've got tunnels under there, and they're going to pull them out. In the meantime, the Americans and the Israelis are rearming, reloading their munitions warehouses, and I think the war is going to continue. Tragically, if it does, and the Americans and the Israelis don't win, I think they're going to use nukes. And we've already mentioned that, but I think that's where we're headed.
That scares me, man. That scares me so much, because the issue is this: the Israelis got the large, large project they call the expansive large Israeli project.
Greater Israel
project that they want to expand it at the cost of everyone else, and they have really a very twisted messianic notion as well, that they have some twisted interpretation, and that if they do this, and then their savior is going to come, is going to be I don't know, whatever right. they believe in. But right. the irony is this: there are the Iranians. They have prepared for this war, but in an asymmetric way. But the issue is this, as you mentioned. At the end of the day, I'm afraid that the Israelis are, along with elements in the U.S. government, they're going to resort to nuclear weapon. And they have dirt on almost all U.S. politicians,
Yes, sir. They absolutely. Yeah. The American-Israeli Political Action Committee, APAC,
APAC. Evil.
You've heard of that, I'm sure. Apparently, yes. They have every single member of Congress and Senate in the U.S. They have assigned at least one person to monitor that congressman
or
senator.
Yeah, I know about that. I know about that. Yeah, they call it their APAC person.
That's it.
Person. So when they put me the policy, they don't say, okay, is this policy good for the U.S. people, for the American people, for the poor? And for no, they say, is this policy acceptable to Israel or not? I mean,
exactly,
think about
right.
it.
Yeah.
I told people, I said, look, Washington, D.C. is in occupied territory, and Congress is in occupied territory, because
correct.
D.C., Republican and Democrat, hand in hand, have continuous standing ovations for Netanyahu.
59 at one point.
That is disgusting.
That's horrible.
That is really bad.
Well, he's the controller of Trump. We know that now.
He's totally the controller. And then, of course, people don't talk about the casualties. The casualty, like in Afghanistan, they say, we had this, and I said, this can't be true. Then I ended up, remember, there was one point, I believe it was back in 2015 or so, there was like 50 individual soldiers per month lost their lives. And I asked a fellow Afghan who's just working in Bagram Air Base, I said, look, what's going on? This it doesn't make sense, because the casualty is higher based on what I know, but this 50, 60 individuals per month can be true. He started laughing. I said, what's so funny? He said, no, it's not funny, because your point is well taken. I told him, enlighten me. He says, well, I went to a source, he says, another Afghan who was a rat working for the for the U.S. forces. He was entrusted with all the information. Mm-hmm. And he said, I ran it with that guy. He told him, well, the casualty is low, 50 individuals per month. Things are improving. And he started laughing, that person. He told him, are you kidding? 60 individuals per day, you mean? And I said, what? He said, yeah. And the people, because it's this is not exposed. And it's mostly they keep the dead bodies and so forth. But like in this case, the hospital in Germany, for example, and the local hospitals in the Middle East, the morgues and so forth, they're flooded. And if you go, anyone that recently traveled from Florida, they realize the the influx of casualty coming into the U.S. And I'm a human being, The other day I saw a little kid. I have kids, all of us got kids, and I had this one kid running to the casket of his father. And I said, I don't get it. These powerful people, these pigs, I said, they don't care. These people are disposable, as these people disposable
That's
everywhere.
Right. That's right.
I mean, you just, okay, kill them, okay, and then dump them, and then you don't support them. You say, okay, the heck with you. You did whatever, and then you become homeless, become whatever, and the kids, you know, like people everywhere, you know.
That's right.
I tell people, look, I tell people all the time here in Afghanistan, I said, look, there is no difference between regular people here in Afghanistan and everywhere. Regular people are the victims on this planet. And the powerful people are the ones that are just playing games with our lives. And it's one of the true ironic situations that really hurt me when I see things like that. And, you know, I see orphans here in villages, Jeff, that I run around. And if you go to any given time here in Kabul, this is like a better place, so to speak. If you go to a restaurant, I rarely eat in a restaurant because I can't, because a lot of orphans and so forth, they stand by the door. And in Ramadan, I went three times for food, and I couldn't. And then I finally had to share my food, and I told them, my friends, and I said, look, I can't go to a restaurant. It's just not moral because, you see, these poor people there, who the heck am I that I should be eating inside? And they stare at me, and I can't do this. And so
they
have army orphans, man. They're just sleeping on the side of the road and so forth, and, you know, some in the cemeteries and so forth. It's just a nightmare and so forth. I mean, the government here, they're doing their best because, you know, Biden, they froze $9 billion and there was of the central bank here. They froze that money, and, you know, Afghanistan doesn't have much, but despite of it, they created a man-made agricultural canal that extends for 180 miles in northern Afghanistan, hoping to have agriculture, you know, spearhead agriculture projects, and for people to have something to eat. But that's all you can do because, you know, natural resources are there, but natural resources needs investment and so forth. You can't do that with empty hands. And then, of course, the one thing is this that really scares me is that the Zionists have, it's like some infection, you know, when you, that it's a metastasized cancer. It has gotten to... But all the Western leadership and circles that no one can escape from. And the cost is everywhere, not just in the West, but also here in this part of the world. The cost is overwhelming, and people don't realize that these are individuals that for them, priority is, you know, their moral fiber is money, money and power. And some twisted interpretation of reality. It's really disgusting. And
it's horrible.
Think if anything happens to humanity, if any nightmare of nuclear and whatever happens, there are some sensible people they're not going to resort to. But these right-wing Zionist elements, they have very twisted interpretation of reality. And I pray to God that nothing like that happens, you know, at least in our lifetime or never.
Yes, they certainly have very little, if no, respect for human life. They don't care if people die. They kill people all the time.
What they did in Gaza, you know, in Gaza, you have little babies, amputations, and they drag their butt on the floor because they cannot walk, remember? And they roam around with one hand, only one hand, and the rest are amputated.
It's unspeakable, and the number of dead in Gaza, probably my best estimate, 400,000 minimum dead.
Yes,
more
very, very,
at least. Yes,
that's very.
And let
true.
Me
that,
ask.
That's
Let me ask one more thing. We have to go. How many American dead so far in the war against Iran? Were there some troops in Kuwait that were hit? Who were staging there, the Marines? Do you know? Do you hear anything about that?
They had a lot of casualties. In the first few days, they had over 1,000 dead. Then the number increased exponentially, because remember, it's you're talking about some missiles with 1 ton of warhead. When you have a missile with 1 ton or 2 tons of warhead, that's not going to confine to small areas.
It's going to have a lot of
explosive detonation, and all that is bound to create a lot of mayhem. And so a lot of people have, a lot of injured, a lot of dead, and the people have to tell them, what the heck, you know, our kids are not for you to be played and sent places and returned in pieces. I mean, this is not acceptable.
It's not acceptable. Dr. Meraki, we have to go. Let's talk again. And I want to tell you how much I respect your work and what you do, and I'm sure all of our listeners feel the same way too.
I'm totally grateful throughout the years for your friendship, for the help you have rendered, and I also, whomever helped or didn't help, I want to thank all of them for listening. And that means a great deal, because at the end of the day, we share our basic tenet, our humanity.
Yes, we do. Okay. All right. We have to say goodnight and look under Dr. Meraki's name for his PayPal account. Thank you, my friend. You be safe. We'll talk.
Thank you very much. Good talking with you.
Thank you. If you can donate, great. All right. That's the truth, what you just heard. And it's far more than that. We'll be back tomorrow night.